This is a cat.
KQAC-HD2 Portland 89.9.
KQOC-HD2 Glen Eden Beach 88.1.
KSLC-HD2 McMinnville 90.3.
KQHR-HD2 The Dalles and Hood River 88.1.
You're listening to ICANN, the International Children's Arts Network. This is the Classical Lullaby Hour, music to rest your eyes to.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
The International Children's Arts Network is community funded, supported by listeners like you, and by a grant from the Joyce N. Furman Memorial Trust, celebrating a lifetime of giving, education, and the arts.
Thank you.
You're listening to the International Children's Arts Network, an All Classical Portland public media station.
KQAC HD2 Portland
89.9. KQOC HD2 Glenydon Beach 88.1.
KSLC HD2 McMinnville 90.3.
And KQHR HD2 The Dells and Hood River 88.1.
You're listening to ICANN, and right now is the complete works of Winnie the Pooh. The Complete Works of Winnie the Pooh. The immortal stories from the books Winnie the Pooh and The House at Pooh Corner, and poems from When We Were Very Young and Now We Are Six by Alan Alexander Milne. Presented for radio, unabridged, in 18 parts. Produced by Christopher Toyne and performed by Peter Dennis. Part 2, in which Pooh goes visiting and gets into a tight place, and in which Eeyore loses a tail and Pooh finds one.
This program is dedicated to Christopher Milne. Sneasels. Christopher Robin had wheezles and sneasels. They bundled him into his bed. They gave him what goes with a cold in the nose and some more for a cold in the head. They wondered if weasels could turn into measles, if sneasels would turn into mumps. They examined his chest for a rash and the rest of his body for swellings and lumps. They sent for some doctors in sneasels and weasels to tell them what ought to be done. All sorts and conditions of famous physicians came hurrying round at a run. They all made a note of the state of his throat. They asked if he suffered from thirst. They asked if the Sneasels came after the Weasels, or if the first Sneasel came first. They said, "If you teasel a Sneasel or Weasel, a Measel may easily grow. But humor or pleasel the Weasel or Sneasel, the Measel will certainly go." They expounded the reasons for Sneasels and Weasels, the manner of measles when new. They said, "If he freezels in draughts and in breezels, then patheasels may even ensue." Christopher Robin got up in the morning. The Sneasels had vanished away, and the look in his eye seemed to say to the sky, "Now, how to amuse them today?" In which Pooh goes visiting and gets into a tight place. Edward Bear, known to his friends as Winnie the Pooh, or Pooh for short, was walking through the forest one day, humming proudly to himself. He had made up a little hum that very morning as he was doing his stoutness exercises in front of the glass. Tra-la-la, tra-la-la, as he stretched up as high as he could, and then tra-la-la, tra-la, oh, help, la, as he tried to reach his toes. After breakfast, he had said it over and over to himself until he had learnt it off by heart, and now he was humming it right through, properly. It went like this. Tra-la-la, 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 rum-tum-tiddle-um-tum. Tiddle-liddle, 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 rum-tum-tum-tiddle-um. Well, he was humming this hum to himself and walking along gaily, wondering what everybody else was doing and what it felt like being somebody else, when suddenly he came to a sandy bank, and in the bank was a large hole.
"Aha,"
said Pooh.
"Rum-tum-tiddle-um-tum. If I know anything about anything, that hole means rabbit," he said. "And rabbit means company," he said. "And company means food, and listening to me humming and such like. Rum-tum-tum-diddle-um."
So he bent down, put his head into the hole and called out,
"Is anybody at home?"
There was a sudden scuffling noise from inside the hole and then silence.
"What I said was, is anybody at home?"
called out Pooh very loudly.
"No," said a voice, and then added, "You needn't shout so loud. I heard you quite well the first time."
"Bother," said Pooh. "Isn't there anybody here at all?"
"Nobody."
Winnie the Pooh took his head out of the hole and thought for a little. And he thought to himself, "There must be somebody there, because somebody must have said nobody." So he put his head back in the hole and said,
"Hello, Rabbit. Isn't that you?"
"No,"
said Rabbit, in a different sort of voice this time.
"But isn't that Rabbit's voice?"
"I don't think so," said Rabbit. "It isn't meant to be."
"Oh,"
said Pooh. He took his head out of the hole and had another think, and then he put it back and said,
"Well, could you very kindly tell me where Rabbit is?"
"He has gone to see his friend Pooh Bear, who is a great friend of his."
"But this is me,"
said Bear, very much surprised.
"What sort of me?"
"Pooh Bear."
"Are you sure?"
said Rabbit, still more surprised.
"Quite, quite sure,"
said Pooh.
"Oh, well then, come in."
So Pooh pushed and pushed and pushed his way through the hole, and at last he got in.
"You were quite right,"
said Rabbit, looking at him all over.
"It is you. Glad to see you."
"Who did you think it was?"
"Well, I wasn't sure. You know how it is in the forest. One can't have anybody coming into one's house. One has to be careful. What about a mouthful of something?"
Pooh always liked a little something at 11 o'clock in the morning, and he was very glad to see Rabbit getting out the plates and mugs. And when Rabbit said,
"Honey or condensed milk with your bread?"
he was so excited that he said, "Both." And then, so as not to seem greedy, he added,
but don't bother about the bread, please.
And for a long time after that he said nothing, until at last, humming to himself in a rather sticky voice, he got up, shook Rabbit lovingly by the paw, and said that he must be going on.
"Must you?"
said Rabbit politely.
"Well," said Pooh, "I could stay a little longer if it...
And he tried very hard to look in the direction of the larder.
"As a matter of fact," said Rabbit, "I was going out myself directly."
"Oh, well, then, I'll be going on. Goodbye."
"Well, goodbye, if you're sure you won't have any more."
"Is there any more?"
asked Pooh quickly.
Rabbit took the covers off the dishes and said, "No, there wasn't."
"I thought not,"
said Pooh, nodding to himself.
"Well, goodbye. I must be going on."
So he started to climb out of the hole. He pulled with his front paws and pushed with his back paws, and in a little while his nose was out in the open again, and then his ears, and then his front paws, and then his shoulders, and then...
"Oh! Oh, help!" said Pooh. "I'd better go back." "Oh, bother," said Pooh. "I shall have to go on." "Oh, I can't do either," said Pooh. "Oh, help and bother."
Now, by this time, Rabbit wanted to go for a walk too, and finding the front door full, he went out by the back door and came round to Pooh and looked at him.
"Hello? You're stuck?" he asked.
"No, no," said Pooh carelessly. "Just resting and thinking and humming to myself."
"Here, give us a paw."
Pooh Bear stretched out a paw, and Rabbit pulled and pulled and pulled.
"Oh!" cried Pooh. "You're hurting."
"The fact is," said Rabbit, "you're stuck."
"It all comes," said Pooh crossly, "of not having front doors big enough."
"It all comes," said Rabbit sternly, "of eating too much." "I thought at the time," said Rabbit, "only I didn't like to say anything," said Rabbit, "that one of us was eating too much," said Rabbit, "and I knew it wasn't me," he said. "Well, well, I shall go and fetch Christopher Robin."
Christopher Robin lived at the other end of the forest, and when he came back with Rabbit and saw the front half of Pooh, he said, "Silly old bear," in such a loving voice that everybody felt quite hopeful again.
"I was just beginning to think," said Bear, sniffing slightly, "that Rabbit might never be able to use his front door again, and I should hate that," he said.
"So should I," said Rabbit.
"Use his front door again," said Christopher Robin. "Of course he'll use his front door again."
"Good,"
said Rabbit. "If we can't pull you out, Pooh, we might push you back."
Rabbit scratched his whiskers thoughtfully and pointed out that when once Pooh was pushed back, he was back.
And of course nobody was more glad to see Pooh than he was. Still, there it was. Some lived in trees and some lived underground and...
"You mean I'd never get out?"
said Pooh.
"I mean," said Rabbit, "that having got so far, it seems a pity to waste it."
Christopher Robin nodded. "Then there's only one thing to be done," he said. "We shall have to wait for you to get thin again."
"How long does getting thin take?"
asked Pooh anxiously. "About a week, I should think."
"But I can't stay here for a week."
"You can stay here, all right, silly old bear. It's getting you out which is so difficult."
"We'll read to you," said Rabbit cheerfully. "And I hope it won't snow," he added. "And I say, old fellow, you're taking up a good deal of room in my house. Do you mind if I use your back legs as a towel horse? Because, I mean, there they are, doing nothing, and it would be very convenient just to hang the towels on them."
"A week?"
said Pooh gloomily.
"What about meals?"
"I'm afraid no meals," said Christopher Robin, "because of getting thin quicker. But we will read to you."
Bear began to sigh. and then found that he couldn't because he was so tightly stuck. And a tear rolled down his eye as he said, "Then would you read a sustaining book, such as would help and comfort a wedged bear in great tightness?"
So for a week, Christopher Robin read that sort of book at the north end of Pooh, and Rabbit hung his washing on the south end. And in between, Bear felt himself getting slenderer and slenderer. And at the end of the week, Christopher Robin said, "Now!" So he took hold of Pooh's front paws, and Rabbit took hold of Christopher Robin, and all Rabbit's friends and relations took hold of Rabbit, and then they all pulled together, and for a long time Pooh only said, "Ow!" and "Ooh!" And then all of a sudden he said, just as if a cork were coming out of a bottle. And Christopher Robin and Rabbit and all Rabbit's friends and relations went head over heels backwards, and on the top of them came Winnie the Pooh, free. So, with a nod of thanks to his friends, he went on with his walk through the forest, humming proudly to himself. But Christopher Robin looked after him lovingly and said to himself, "Silly old bear." Buckingham Palace. They're changing guard at Buckingham Palace. Christopher Robin went down with Alice. Alice is marrying one of the guard. "A soldier's life is terrible hard," says Alice. They're changing guard at Buckingham Palace. Christopher Robin went down with Alice. We saw a guard in a sentry box. "One of the sergeants looks after their socks," says Alice. They're changing guard at Buckingham Palace. Christopher Robin went down with Alice. We looked for the king, but he never came. "Well, God take care of him all the same," says Alice. They're changing guard at Buckingham Palace. Christopher Robin went down with Alice. They've great big parties inside the grounds. "I wouldn't be king for £100, says Alice. They're changing guard at Buckingham Palace. Christopher Robin went down with Alice. A face looked out, but it wasn't the king's. "He's much too busy assigning things," says Alice. They're changing guard at Buckingham Palace. Christopher Robin went down with Alice. "Do you think the king knows all about me?" "Sure to, dear, but it's time for tea," says Alice. In which Eeyore loses a tail and Pooh finds one. The old grey donkey Eeyore stood by himself in a thistly corner of the forest, his front feet well apart, his head on one side, and thought about things. Sometimes he thought sadly to himself,
"Why?"
And sometimes he thought,
"Wherefore?"
And sometimes he thought,
"In as much as which?"
And sometimes he didn't quite know what he was thinking about. So when Winnie the Pooh came stumping along, Eeyore was very glad to be able to stop thinking for a little in order to say,
"How do you do?"
in a gloomy manner to him.
"And how are you?"
said Winnie the Pooh. Eeyore shook his head from side to side.
"Not very how,"
he said.
"I don't seem to have felt at all how for a long time." "Dear, dear,"
said Pooh,
"I'm sorry about that. Let's have a look at you."
So Eeyore stood there, gazing sadly at the ground, and Winnie the Pooh walked all round him once.
"Why, what's happened to your tail?"
he said in surprise.
"What has happened to it?"
said Eeyore.
"It isn't there." "Are you sure?" "Well, either a tail is there or it isn't there. You can't make a mistake about it, and yours isn't there." "Then what is?" "Nothing." "Let's have a look,"
said Eeyore, and he turned slowly round to the place where his tail had been a little while ago, and then, finding that he couldn't catch it up, he turned round the other way until he came back to where he was at first. And then he put his head down and looked between his front legs
and at last he said with a long, sad sigh,
I believe you're right. Of course I'm right, said Pooh. That accounts for a good deal, said Eeyore gloomily. It explains everything. No wonder. You must have left it somewhere, said Winnie the Pooh. Somebody must have taken it, said Eeyore. How like them, he added after a long silence.
Pooh felt that he really ought to say something helpful about it, but didn't quite know what, so he decided to do something helpful instead.
Eeyore, he said solemnly, I, Winnie the Pooh, will find your tail for you. Thank you, Pooh, answered Eeyore. You're a real friend, said he. Not like some, he said.
So Winnie the Pooh went off to find Eeyore's tail. It was a fine spring morning in the forest as he started out. Little soft clouds played happily in a blue sky, skipping from time to time in front of the sun as if they'd come to put it out, and then sliding away suddenly so that the next might have his turn. Through them and between them, the sun shone bravely, and a copse which had worn its furs all the year round seemed old and dowdy now beside the new green lace which the beeches had put on so prettily. Through copse and spinney marched Bear, down open slopes of gorse and heather, over rocky beds of streams, up steep banks of sandstone into the heather again, and so at last, tired and hungry, to the 100-acre wood. For it was in the 100-acre wood that Owl lived.
And if anybody knows anything about anything, said Bear to himself, it's Owl who knows something about something, he said. Or my name's not Winnie the Pooh, he said. Which it is, he added. So there you are.
Owl lived at the Chestnuts, an old world residence of great charm, which was grander than anybody else's, or seemed so to Bear, because it had both a knocker and a bell pull. Underneath the knocker there was a notice which said, Please ring if an rent sir is required. Underneath the bell pull there was a notice which said, Ples canoke if an rinser is not requid. These notices had been written by Christopher Robin, who was the only one in the forest who could spell. For Owl, wise though he was in many ways, able to read and write and spell his own name, Wall, yet somehow went all to pieces over delicate words like measles and buttered toast. Winnie the Pooh read the two notices very carefully, first from left to right, and afterwards, in case he had missed some of it, from right to left. Then, to make quite sure, he knocked and pulled the knocker, and he pulled and knocked the bell rope, and he called out in a very loud voice,
Owl, I require an answer. It's Bear speaking.
And the door opened, and Owl looked out.
Hello, Pooh, he said. How's things?
Terrible and sad, said Pooh, because Eeyore, who is a friend of mine, has lost his tail, and he's moping about it. So could you very kindly tell me how to find it for him?
Well, said Owl, the customary procedure in such cases is as follows.
What does crustimony proceed cake mean? Said Pooh. For I am a bear of very little brain, and long words bother me.
It means the thing to do.
As long as it means that, I don't mind, said Pooh humbly.
The thing to do is as follows. First, issue a reward, then...
Just a moment, said Pooh, holding up his paw. What do we do to this, what you were saying? You sneezed just as you were going to tell me.
I didn't sneeze.
Yes, you did, Owl.
Excuse me, Pooh, I didn't. You can't sneeze without knowing it.
Well, you can't know it without something having been sneezed.
What I said was, first issue a reward...
You're doing it again, said Pooh sadly.
A reward,
said Owl very loudly.
we write a notice to say that we will give a large something to anybody who finds Eeyore's tail.
I see,
said Pooh, nodding his head.
Talking about large somethings,
he went on dreamily,
I generally have a small something about now, about this time in the morning.
And he looked wistfully at the cupboard in the corner of Owl's parlour.
Just a mouthful of condensed milk or what not, with perhaps a lick of honey.
Well then, said Owl, we write out this notice and we put it up all over the forest.
A lick of honey,
murmured Bear to himself.
Or not, as the case may be.
And he gave a deep sigh and tried very hard to listen to what Owl was saying. But Owl went on and on, using longer and longer words, until at last he came back to where he started, and he explained that the person to write out this notice was Christopher Robin.
It was he who wrote the ones on my front door for me. Did you see them, Pooh?
For some time now, Pooh had been saying yes and no in turn, with his eyes shut, to all that Owl was saying. And having said yes, yes last time, he said no, not at all now, without really knowing what Owl was talking about.
Oh, didn't you see them?
said Owl, a little surprised.
Come and look at them now.
So they went outside, and Pooh looked at the knocker and the notice below it, and he looked at the bell rope and the notice below it. And the more he looked at the bell rope, the more he felt that he had seen something like it somewhere else, some time before.
A handsome bell rope, isn't it?
said Owl. Pooh nodded.
It reminds me of something,
he said.
But I can't think what. Where did you get it?
I just came across it in the forest, and it was hanging over a bush, and I thought at first somebody lived there, so I rang it, and nothing happened, and then I rang it again very loudly, and it came off in my hand, and as nobody seemed to want it, I took it home, and...
Owl, said Pooh solemnly, you made a mistake. Somebody did want it.
Who?
Eeyore. My dear friend Eeyore, he was fond of it.
Fond of it?
Attached to it,
said Winnie the Pooh sadly. So with these words he unhooked it and carried it back to Eeyore. And when Christopher Robin had nailed it on in its right place again, Eeyore frisked about the forest, waving his tail so happily that Winnie the Pooh came over all funny and had to hurry home for a little snack of something to sustain him. And wiping his mouth half an hour afterwards, he sang to himself proudly,
Who found the tail? I,
said Pooh,
at 2:45. Only it was 11:15, really. I found the tail.
Hoppity. Christopher Robin goes hoppity, 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 hop. Whenever I tell him politely to stop it, he says he can't possibly stop. If he stopped hopping, he couldn't go anywhere. Poor little Christopher couldn't go anywhere. That's why he always goes hoppity, 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 hop. Sand between the toes. I went down to the shouting sea, taking Christopher down with me, for Nurse had given us 6 pence each, and down we went to the beach. We had sand in the eyes and the ears and the nose, and sand in the hair and sand between the toes. Whenever a good nor'wester blows, Christopher is certain of sand between the toes. The sea was galloping grey and white. Christopher clutched his 6pence tight. We clambered over the humping sand, and Christopher held my hand. We had sand in the eyes and the ears and the nose, and sand in the hair and sand between the toes. Whenever a good nor'wester blows, Christopher is certain of sand between the toes. There was a roaring in the sky. The seagulls cried as they blew by. We tried to talk, but we had to shout. Nobody else was out. When we got home, we had sand in the hair, in the eyes, in the ears, and everywhere. Whenever a good nor'wester blows, Christopher is found with sand between the toes. Daffodowndilly. She wore her yellow sunbonnet. She wore her greenest gown. She turned to the south wind and curtsied up and down. She turned to the sunlight and shook her yellow head and whispered to her neighbor, "Winter is dead."
The Complete Works of Winnie the Pooh, performed by Peter Dennis, based on the stage show Bother. Music composed and conducted by Don Davis. Piano played by Gloria Chang and clarinet by Charles Boito. Production recorded and mixed by Jeff Sykes at KCRW Santa Monica. Executive producer Jacqueline Delorier. Radio production directed by Christopher Toyne. A co-production of KCRW and Bother LA Production.
You've just heard the complete works of Winnie the Pooh on ICAN HD2 and ICANradio.org. Unabridged recordings of the four Winnie the Pooh books can be found at danpour.com or by calling 1-855-369-6768.
You're listening to ICAN, and that was Winnie the Pooh Goes Visiting and Gets into a Tight Space. Join us tomorrow right here on ICAN at the same time for the complete works of Winnie the Pooh, Piglet Meets a Heffalump. Gilbert House Children's Museum supports ICAN Radio with 20 hands-on exhibits located in 5 historic houses of Salem. We provide the opportunity for children to learn through creative play and discovery. For more information, visit acgilbert.org.
Was the princess you?
And she fell in love.
Was it hard to do?
It was very easy. Anyone could see that the prince was charming. The only one for me.
Was he strong and handsome?
Was he big and tall?
There's nobody like him anywhere at all.
Did he say he loved you?
Did he steal a kiss?
He was so romantic, I could not resist.
Story time.
Hello, this is Bertie, and in a moment, Natasha is going to be reading a brand new Katie story. But first, I would like to take a little time to thank our supporters on Patreon who generously help Story Nori. I'd like to say a big happy birthday to Tristan, who is 8 years old. Have a wonderful birthday, Tristan. And another major happy birthday to Cecily, who's going to be 6 years old very soon. Have a lovely birthday, Cecily. And thank you so much to Ellie and Ari and Almeida. When Ari turned 8, he asked his mum to support Story Nori as a birthday present. That's so generous of you, Ari. And a very special greeting to Evelyn in California, who likes to reenact our Lapis stories. Thank you, Evelyn. I'm thinking of writing a book about Lapis. And we have yet more people to thank. We'll be mentioning you very soon. Thank you to all our supporters and listeners everywhere. Now, here's Natasha with a story about a magical deer.
Katie and the Magical Deer. Hello, this is Natasha, and I'm here with a story about Katie, who is a little bit like you. She goes to school with other ordinary people. But there's one thing that's a bit different about her. She's a witch and can do magic spells. This story features one of my favourite animals, a deer. Deer are delicate and vulnerable. Down the ages, people have hunted them for their meat, which is called venison. They are very good at hiding. They blend into the undergrowth and the woods, and the antlers of the stags look just like branches. But if they run, they spring and glide through the air so gracefully. Well, enough about deer, and on with the story. You may remember that Katie has a friend called Paul. He used to go to Katie's school, but he was expelled after he stole Katie's spellbook and started to play tricks on the teachers. Katie then learned that there was magic in Paul's family, but his parents were ashamed of it and tried to discourage Paul from learning magic. Katie still keeps in touch with them. In fact, one Friday evening, not long ago, she went around to Paul's house. She sat at the kitchen table and watched him cook satay sweet potato curry. Eleanor, who was one of Paul's two elder sisters, came into the kitchen and said, "Typical, I have a brother who wants to be a chef, and he's vegan. I can't wait for Mum to get back from her trip and cook burgers." Paul spooned up some of his curry from the pan, blew on it to cool it, and tasted it. "I knew it. I poured too much salt in it," he exclaimed. "Don't worry about that," said Katie. She made magical gestures with her fingers. White grains of salt gradually rose out of the pan and flew back into the cellar through the little holes in the top. "Nice!" exclaimed Eleanor. "Paul said you were a witch, but I didn't actually know you practiced magic. You know, we have some ancestors who were wizards. But Mum and Dad don't like us to talk about it." "I know," said Katie. "It's understandable. There's a lot of prejudice against magic." Paul's curry turned out to be so delicious that even Eleanor had to agree it was good. And when they finished eating, they went into the living room to search for something half-decent to watch on FlixPix. While Paul was scrolling through endless soaps and unfunny comedies, Katie looked around the room. "Is that a coat of arms?" she asked, pointing at a picture frame. "Yes, that belongs to my dad's side of the family," said Paul. "The design was of a shield with a stag rising up on its hind legs." "Deer are one of the most magical types of creatures," said Katie. "I know," said Paul. "My grandfather used to use powder from a deer's antler in his magic spells." Eventually, they decided to watch the first episode of a Dutch detective series. It was just getting interesting when Katie's mum rang the doorbell to pick her up and drive her home. That night, Katie dreamed that she was walking through the park when she saw a deer under a tree. He was a young stag with golden antlers like a crown. She stopped to look at him, and the deer walked over to meet her. She patted his neck, and he nuzzled her with his soft nose. When Katie awoke in the morning, her dream was still playing in her head. Did that really happen? She asked herself, because it seemed too real to be a dream. A little later, still in her dressing gown, she went into the kitchen to brew witch's tea. The kitchen had a glass door looking into the garden. It was through this door she saw a deer out the back. He had golden antlers, just like the one in her dream, and was nibbling on the leaves of her mother's magical moringa tree. "That's him!" exclaimed Katie. "He's the deer that I remember from my dream." Or was it a dream? How did he get there? She went out into the garden and approached the deer. He didn't run away. First his ears swiveled round and pointed at her, and then he slowly walked on his long, delicate legs towards her. A muscle in his side was trembling, and his tail was swishing. "Poor you," said Katie. "The ticks and fleas are making you itchy. I don't want those on me either, so I'll just get rid of them for you." She ran back into the kitchen and fetched some of Solomon's magical flea powder. It worked far quicker than the extremely expensive stuff from the vet, and only had natural ingredients, such as mandrake's root, crocodile tears, and glass eye. She said a little spell and blew the powder from the palm of her hand so that it flew over and settled on the deer. All the blood-sucking ticks and fleas immediately packed their bags and left, hopping their way across the garden to find some other poor creature to torment. Katie could tell that the deer was happy. There were lights in his eyes. He came over and nuzzled her with his big soft nose. She felt his antlers, and they were smooth and cool, and so she thought they were probably actually gold. "Clearly you are a magical deer," said Katie. "But did I dream you up, or did you come here on your own?" The deer scuffed the ground with his hind foot. He seemed frustrated. "Oh, how I wish you could talk and tell me how you got here," exclaimed Katie. "Don't go away. I'll ask my mum if she knows a spell to make deer talk human languages." Katie went back inside. Her mother was pouring sorrel soup into her flask to take with her to the magic shop. She had been watching Katie in the garden. "Where did he come from?" she asked as Katie came in. "I think he may have manifested in my dream," said Katie, because I dreamed about him last night, and then this morning he was there in the garden. "Hmm," said her mother. "He clearly seems to have a bond with you." "I wish he could tell me where he's from," said Katie. "Do you have any magic for making a deer talk?" "I don't recall any spells like that," said her mum. "Now, cats can be pretty chatty, of course. But generally speaking, deers are the silent types. But I'm in a hurry to open the shop. Saturday mornings can be really busy. Stay safe and don't forget to do your homework." Her mother gave Katie a kiss and headed for the hallway to put on her coat. Later that morning, while Katie was doing her homework, she heard someone hammering on the front door. "Those delivery people are so rude," she thought as she went downstairs. But it wasn't a delivery. Their bad-tempered neighbour was on the doorstep. "Are you keeping deer these days?" she demanded to know. "Not exactly, Mrs. Grime," said Katie. "Well, one of your menagerie is in my garden, pooping all over my lawn and helping himself to my apple tree," she said angrily. "It's hardly a menagerie," said Katie. "We have one cat, one deer, and a few tropical fish." "I don't care what beasts you keep in your house and garden, so long as they don't invade my property." "Just give me a minute. I'll go out into the garden and call him," said Katie. They went out into the garden and looked over the fence. "Hey, come back! You can't eat those apples. They belong to our neighbour," she called. The deer turned his head and waggled his ears at her. She beckoned frantically to him. In a moment he took off from his hind legs and glided gracefully back over the fence. "Oh, thank you," said Katie when he landed back on her lawn. And she whispered, "You know, our neighbour's not exactly very neighbourly. You'd better stay in our garden." But her cat Solomon, who was sitting up in a tree, meowed. "If he stays here, he'll eat every last leaf and every last blade of grass. There'll be nothing left but stones and earth." Katie looked at the moronga tree and sighed. It was true that several branches were stripped naked of leaves. "I know," she said. "Let's go for a walk in the park. There are plenty of greens to fill you up there." She led the way back to the kitchen door. Unfortunately, when they were inside the hallway, his antlers became entangled in the chandelier. He shook his head trying to free himself. And light bulbs went flying off to the side and smashing against the walls and the floor. Katie managed to do a couple of quick spells to untangle him and to clean up all the tiny bits of glass. They managed to escape through the front door and out onto the pavement. "This way," said Katie, and the deer gently padded along behind her. "I think you're going to attract quite a lot of attention," said Katie to the deer. "Perhaps it would be better if people couldn't see you." She snapped her fingers and made him invisible. Katie turned into Park Road. As they were going along, two girls that Katie knew from school came out of a house and saw her. "Oh, look, it's that witch Katie," said one of the girls, who was called Jemima. "Let's go sing for her," said the other, who was called Nellie. Nellie and Jemima ran across the road to Katie and started dancing around her and singing, "Ding dong, the witch is Kate." "Ah, get away from me," exclaimed Katie. But the girls kept on getting in her way and trying to trip her up. "Witches shouldn't come out in the day, only at night on broomsticks," said Nellie right in Katie's face. "Yeah, witch, if you're so smart, put a spell on us," said Jemima. It was at times like this that Katie really wished to put a spell on certain people and turn them into slimy slugs, but she knew she wasn't allowed to do that. If she did, she would be the one who got into trouble. But her friend, the deer, did not feel the need to follow any such rules. He was trotting along behind Katie, so she did not realise that he had turned visible. Now he was charging along the pavement with his golden horns lowered in attack mode. The two girls turned and ran screaming, "Ah! There's a deer after us!" all the way back to Nellie's house. The deer came trotting back to Katie with his head held high and his ears waggling. Katie put her arm around his neck and gave him a huge hug. "Oh, thank you so much. You really are my best friend." They soon reached the park, but there was a problem. The entrance had a cattle grid to stop hooved animals wandering across it. But the deer took a run down the road and leapt into the air just before the gate. Katie held her breath. If he landed in the cattle grid, he would surely break one of his thin, delicate legs. But fortunately, he wasn't just any old deer. He was a magical deer, which was why he was so able to effortlessly fly over the dangerous rungs. "Bravo!" clapped Katie. Katie and her friend, the magical deer, headed for some trees with some delicious-looking green leaves. And the deer stood on his hind legs with his front legs resting high up on the trunk of a tree. And he nibbled away. While he was doing that, a dog came running up out of nowhere, barking his head off. "Hey, get away, you stupid animal! Don't you know it's dangerous to chase deer?" shouted Katie. The deer turned and began to run towards the dog with his antlers down. "Uh-oh! I hope nothing bad happens," thought Katie. The dog also turned around and bolted away from the deer with his tail between his legs. "You can stop chasing now," said Katie, and the deer did as he was told. "Well done," she congratulated him. "Nobody messes with you." Katie wasn't the only one to be impressed by the incident. A pretty spotted deer, a doe, trotted up to the magical deer, wagging her tail. He raised his head and held his crown of golden antlers up high. "Oh, don't the girls like you," thought Katie. But there was a male deer, a large brown stag, who clearly didn't. He was much bigger than Katie's deer, and now he came charging up to challenge him. Katie's deer lowered his golden antlers and locked them in battle with the challenger. Katie could hardly watch as the two male deer battled it out, headbutting with a clash of gold against horn. She desperately tried to think of a magic spell to calm them down. She said some words, but they did not seem to work on deer. The magical deer, despite being the small of the two combatants, had surprising strength and pushed his rival back out of the woods and into the bracken. Soon the large deer conceded defeat and trotted away. "Hooray!" shouted Katie, running over to her magical deer friend. "You showed that bully!" She was relieved that neither of the deer were hurt. When the magical deer had enjoyed a well-deserved breakfast of fresh grass and leaves, they returned home back the way they had come. Once again, he flew over the cattle grid. Katie was relieved to reach home without any more incidents. She didn't want to bring the deer back through the house again in case he did any more damage. The only other way for him to get back into her garden was to sneak through the neighbour's property and jump over the garden fence again, which he did, fortunately, without being spotted. As Katie came through the front door, she heard her mother calling out, "Katie, is that you? Come into the kitchen, please, darling." Katie did as she was told and found in the kitchen not only her mum, but a worried-looking visitor. It was Paul's mum. "Katie, have you seen Paul today?" asked her mother.
No, said Katie, "not since last evening."
"He's been gone all day," said Paul's mother. "I was hoping he was with you."
Katie's mother said,
According to the crystal ball, he was with you this morning in the park. He was? Asked Katie, baffled. Oh, that makes sense. Sort of. Don't worry, Mrs. Stag. I know where he is. Just look out into the back garden. And there he was, the deer with golden antlers. Said Katie's mother. I'd better go and consult my spell book. Come and help me, Katie. Excuse us for a short while, please. Up in her magical room, Katie's mum said, You said this morning that you dreamed about deer. What I think happened is that you turned Paul into a deer in your dream. Now, you can only dream him back into Paul again. Oh, said Katie, I don't think I know how. Just close your eyes and think about Paul as a boy. Not a deer, and I'll do the rest, said her mother. Which is what Katie did. And I'm very glad to say that when they went back downstairs, Paul was sitting around the kitchen table with his mum. Well, I should have known it was you, exclaimed Katie. That cocky deer behaved just like you do. Well, thanks, Katie, said Paul. I enjoyed having 4 feet and a pair of antlers. I felt a kind of animal power and instinct. This incident, said his mother with a sigh, shows exactly why your father and I do not encourage magic in our family. And with that, she thanked Katie and her mother somewhat coolly and took her son home for a good shower to wash off a musky, leathery odour that was hanging around him. And that was the story of Katie and the Magical Deer. I do hope you enjoyed it. And tune back for more stories soon on storynori.com. For now, from me, Natasha. Bye-bye!
iCan is a place for kids.
KQAC HD2 Portland 89.9.
KQOC HD2 Glen Eden Beach 88.1.
KSLC HD2 McMinnville 90.3.
KQHR HD2 The Dalles and Hood River 88.1.